Ela também me acha.
Everybody, and welcome to Motion Picture Pals, where we real Americans finally take a stand against these Antifa soy boys and tell them what we think about movies. I am Cam Call. With me is Rebecca Markley.
Hello.
Hoel Alaman.
Hello.
And producer Travis Lee.
Hello.
And this week we watched First Cow, which is a cow movie. It belongs to the cow genre of film. It was directed by Kelly Reichert. It's about the first cow in the Oregon Territory. Hoel, you chose this movie, so please tell us a little bit about First Cow.
Sweet. So I chose First Cow as one of our options, mostly because I saw a very funny comment thread about it, about how somebody was trying to convince their parent to watch the movie, and the only thing the child had to tell the parent to convince them was, it's a movie and there's a cow and there's only one of them. It's the first one. And in that moment, I knew I had to watch this film. It was very surprising. I went into it thinking it was going to be some big heist to bring the cow to the Oregon Territory, but it became a different kind of heist to get some milk to maybe start up a hotel one day and have a brighter tomorrow with stolen milk.
Yeah. That's pretty much what the movie's about. Yeah, it's very atmospheric. There's actually not all that much plot that happens. It really is just about a couple of guys trying to, use dairy to improve their lives. So this is a fairly new movie. None of us have seen it. What did we all think?
I enjoyed the, moodiness of this movie.
The mooiness?
The moodiness of the... I enjoyed... Did the cow ever moo? I can't remember.
No, it didn't moo once.
The cow never mooed? Not even once?
I don't think it really made any noises at all.
That's really weird.
It just kind of sat there and got milked.
Yeah, which, what else do you want to do if you're a cow?
I wasn't looking for it to moo while I was watching it, but now that I'm thinking about it, it seems kind of disappointing that the cow never mooed. Anyway... I did enjoy that atmospheric element of it. I think the one thing it left me wanting was for things to happen, but I also don't think that was really in the spirit of the movie, because it's very much a movie about a feeling, I think, rather than any sort of plot, like you were saying, Cam. So I mean, yeah, overall I was pretty happy with the movie.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me of a slice of life novel where it's just these people living their lives and not a lot of things happen. You just get to sort of see them existing. I enjoyed the film, but I kind of wanted more interracial relationships hanging out in the forest milking cows and opening a bakery, and I wanted there to be a happily ever after because it was so wholesome, and I was kind of sad at the end, but I think that was just a general preference for how I what I wanted from the film. But yeah, there was definitely a moodiness to the whole thing, and it was very atmospheric, and I don't know, quite nice.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think I enjoyed it. It's probably not one I'm gonna rewatch anytime soon, but I thought it was a nice little film. I enjoyed the premise. I liked the plot. I thought there were some kind of interesting things about it, but most of all, it's a vibes movie. You just kind of watch it and you're vibing with these dudes and the cow and their baked goods. The ending's kind of a bummer, but we'll get into that. But yeah, I liked it. It's kind of if you got nothing better to do and you want to watch a nice little movie that has some pretty nice natural scenery, some pretty cool period costumes, and just a nice evocative feeling, this is a good one for that.
Yeah, I really liked how it kind of brought me as if I was there in this kind of new unventured area with all these dirty men. Travis and I watched the film together, and the only way we could describe some of the earlier characters on the screen is the dirty men, which I thought was pretty funny. And it just kind of really captured that feeling of you're in this new place, but also there's nothing here. And it's kind of boring as a result of that. Like, people don't really have much to do. But going off of what Rebecca said, like, I really loved the relationship between the two main characters. I often caught myself like really hoping that they were into each other.
Me too. In a romantic aspect. Me too.
Yeah, Howell kept saying he wanted them to fuck.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I mean, that would have been great too. But I feel like I just wanted some more like tender moments of like sharing. I don't know, like
penises.
Having an oily cake and then making out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or just sort of like brushing hair out of each other's eyes, or like,
right,
you wanted Portrait of a Lady on Fire in the forest.
I did.
Yeah, no, I definitely like love the moments where our two main characters just kind of have like this palpable tension between them of like they want to have this future to, like, together, but it's not really stated, and they kind of just really support each other a lot. And like, you know, it has these tones of like there's something more between them. And then at the very end of the film, you kind of get the like a smidgen of confirmation, only to be like immediately met with sadness if you remember the beginning scene.
Speaking of the characters, I just brought up the list of people who are in this movie. So just real quick, John Magaro is kind of the main protagonist. Cookie is his name in the film. Orion Lee is his friend, King Lu, the Chinese man that he meets early in the film, and his friend basically throughout the entire film. There's a couple other famous people in it. Toby Jones is this guy. I don't know if Chief Factor is his name or his title in the film, but he's in a lot of stuff. He's the voice of Dobby in Harry Potter, which is
what
a fun.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because he seemed really familiar. He's also like, he's in the Hunger Games. And he's in a lot of stuff, honestly. You just look him up. And then Ewan Bremner is like a Scottish man in both in real life and in this movie.
Oh, cool.
And he's in Wonder Woman. He's in Pearl Harbor, and he's in Trainspotting. So it's interesting. Yeah, the much more famous roles were kind of these minor supporting characters. And like, I at least personally had never really seen any of the main characters or the main actors in anything. But anyways, yeah, since we were already kind of talking about the friendship and maybe more than friendship, who knows, dynamics in this movie, I think that's a fine place to start. I actually liked that it was just like guys being dudes with their cow, and like it wasn't necessarily sexual or romantic at all. Rebecca and I were talking about this, but we both, and I especially, really wanted this to just be like two guys being friends in the forest and like occasionally stealing milk and like,
yeah,
baking nice little treats for all the stinky fur trappers. I like that dynamic. I thought it was fun, and I thought their friendship seemed very like wholesome and real. I think both of their performances were very good when it came to their like little moments together. There's a scene like really early where after Cookie and King Lu, you know, they meet and then they kind of go their separate ways. And then there's actually a pretty big time jump that is not really apparent when it happens. But
I missed this.
Yeah. So it's when Cookie gets to Fort Tillicum, and then he meets King Lu there during a bar fight. Then they go over to King Lu's his little cabin. And King Lu's out splitting firewood, and Cookie like sweeps the floor and grabs some wildflowers and puts them in a little jug. And it's, I don't know, I thought that was very cute. That's kind of the scene that to me really captures the feeling of this movie, of just like having a time out on the frontier.
Has anyone ever had an oily cake? I wasn't really sure what that was.
I assume it's just like a funnel cake, but instead of it getting like piped out of a bag, it's just a spoon into oil.
Okay. Yeah, or like a beignet, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely looked like to me like a very early version of like a donut.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
Okay.
Just donut holes or Timbits or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, because everyone was really impressed with them. It was like they had never tasted it. Well, they said that they were reminded of London.
They taste London in this bread.
Yeah, Chief Factor was really excited about it. I mean, all the guys were excited. I actually really love that first scene where King Lu finally convinces Cookie that, like, they should bring a batch of the cakes to the market. And he's like, oh, I don't know about this. And he's like, no, it'll be good. And then you have like all these gruff trappers like looking at these weird little cakes. And they're just like, what's in these? And he's like, it's an ancient Chinese secret. And then once they start eating them, they're just like, oh, my God, this is so delicious. And I just thought that was very funny. And again, just a very wholesome scene of just like dudes out in the woods, like having a good time baking cakes and paying a bunch of money for food that isn't ass.
Yeah, especially because they are so like gruff and dirty and
yeah,
I don't know, just like I feel like a very sort of like the epitome of like, oh, masculinity. I'm out on the frontier being a trapper and then I'm gonna get so excited about these like little cakes. I don't know, thought it was cute.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with like masculinity in this movie, I've noticed, and we can get into that as a more kind of thematic discussion later. But I feel like a lot of it has to do with like the comforts of home and decent food, juxtaposed with kind of the myth we have, especially because, you know, we're all in the Northwest. Well, most of us are. One of us is no longer. About, you know, fur trappers and pioneers out in the frontier and, you know, basically like hard men making hard decisions out on the trail, when it's like really probably was more like this, just some dude fried up some little cakes. And because there's no fucking cows out here, you're really excited about actually fluffy baked goods. I was a little confused as to where they got the honey to dress up the oily cakes, because one of them is just like, oh, I wish we had some honey. And then in the next scene, they have it. Which, I don't know, I guess you would probably buy that from a passing ship or whatever. I also thought it was funny that they have that little, like, whatever the fuck that thing is called, the ball on the stick, or the ball at the end of the stick that you dunk into the honey. Wand. Is that what it's called, a wand?
Maybe, but
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I always see that in depictions of honey, but I didn't actually think it was a real thing.
There's the grocery store by our house sells them, and I was always wondering, like, who are these people that have like these little pots of honey that they're using often enough that like a regular little spoon won't do? But I saw like a tweet about this the other day where someone was like, what the fuck, these are real? I thought they were just for cereal commercials.
Yeah.
Apparently they're called honey dippers, but also are referred to as wands, sticks, spoons, and drizzlers.
Well, it's not a spoon. That shit needs to stop immediately. I like dripper. I feel like that's the best word for it.
Dripper, yeah, definitely feels, yeah, like it's an accurate one.
And I feel like you could use it. That makes it seem like you could use it for other thick stuff, like, I don't know, like oyster sauce or something.
I'm trying to imagine it just like sitting in like this big container of oyster
sauce.
Yeah,
the funny thing would be to have a big like semi-sealed off container of oyster sauce in your kitchen.
I think that would just be really stinky.
Yeah, it would be horrible.
Yeah.
Our cat would really like it though.
What are the grooves in the honey dipper supposed to do?
I think
they hold the honey.
Yeah, I think they allow it to sort of just like kind of like fall through because it's so like viscous. And so you can get that nice drizzle.
And how is this any better than a spoon?
That's really the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you just like want to be cute and aesthetic, then like more power to you. Please be cute and aesthetic and use your little like honey dipper thing. Dripper or whatever.
But maybe you could only afford one utensil back in the day and you would have to choose. You either get a spoon or a honey dripper.
Yeah, but don't go waving your honey dripper about like you're better than us or something.
No, don't even think about it.
Yeah, that would be really rude.
Speaking of superiority, let's talk a little bit about kind of this depiction of, I guess, like capitalism and classism in this movie. I thought that was really interesting, right? Because so much of it happens with these fur trappers. And actually, there's a decent amount of Native peoples sort of depicted in this film. And they're not really central to the plot in any way until like the very end. But that's more of by coincidence. But then within the fort, there are basically, it's pretty much just Scots and an English guy who owns at least part of the company that runs the fort. And they're, you know, they have nicer clothes and just better things than everybody and clearly have like these comforts that money can get you. And I mean, like the chief factor is like living like in a house. It's indistinguishable from just like any other sort of manor house, except that it's out on the Oregon coast. Whereas all the other people are living in like literal just boarded up shacks out in the middle of the fucking forest, I guess. I didn't really understand what the layout was or like how people were living or like where they were taking shits or anything like that in this
little.
It
really felt like people were just kind of finding a clearing, getting some like planks together and say, I live here now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like very frontier-esque.
And just like really far away from each other. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting just because, and I mean, that's kind of a big theme in the film, right, is kind of the end of the frontier as, you know, more quote unquote civilization is going to be coming to the Oregon Territory. There's a pretty significant scenes about this where King Lou kind of has this little monologue, or I guess a little speech that he gives in a conversation he's having with Cookie about how it feels like history hasn't come here yet, and we're like really lucky to get here early, and we kind of have this opportunity to like make our mark on the world and in a way that we couldn't anywhere else. And there's this sort of interesting exchange where Cookie says, oh, it feels really old to me. And then this is, of course, happening with like the Native people, not present in the scene, but they're sort of all around throughout the movie. And then just as a quick aside, right, it's kind of a myth of the like untamed American wilderness.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of that actually happened because like a lot of Native peoples died of smallpox and other illnesses. And so the people who were tending the land were all fucking dead. And so it seemed way more wild than it really would have been otherwise, which is sort of an interesting thing. It's this movie deals with like the presence of indigenous peoples in a very indirect way, but a way that I didn't think was bad, where it's like it's constantly there. It's this ever present undertone, but it's never addressed in any sort of explicit ways.
Definitely. And I also think, you know, we have to like understand too that I guess the settlers' idea of taming the land is like totally different than indigenous practices of, I guess, living and caring for their land as well. So, you know, like you aren't just like hunting beavers to the point where they're like almost extinct because the fashions in Paris are such that, you know, but
not even eating the tails,
not even eating the best part. Exactly.
Yeah. I enjoyed that character who's presumably some chief of the Native peoples that you're seeing.
I think he was like Tillicum.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's like a, yeah. Anyways. And he's just like this huge man who's just talks about how weird the white men are for not eating the beaver tails because it's delicious. And he's like, what's the point of hunting the beaver? Like, I get that you want the fur, but like you just get the tails right there.
Might as well eat it while you got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I want to know what that tastes like now.
I feel like beavers aren't like endangered anymore, are they? I think they're doing all right.
I've never heard anyone talk about beavers like they were in danger.
I'm going to look it up and see if you can eat beaver.
I think they build the dams and then they just vibe in them.
Yeah, I mean, what sounds like a good life to me. Yeah, there's a lot of articles about like how to cook beaver and like whether it's safe. Yes, by the way.
Why wouldn't it be safe?
I don't know. It's just like people are asking and various websites are saying it's fine. Well, okay. That one's on the bucket list now.
Cool.
I have a beautiful like image in my head of like post-human society where beavers have advanced and are now the dam workers.
Yes.
They have like little turbines made of tree branches inside their huge beaver dams that they use to produce electricity.
They've got little beaver like hard hats on.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so cute.
And we're back. This is a quick reminder to you all to follow our new Twitter. It's @MotionPicPals. To follow the show on Substack, it's motionpicturepals.substack.com. And you can join the Discord. It's bit.ly/motionpicturepals. On the Discord, you can talk to us, you can talk to each other, you can help us decide movies. It's a good time. Get on, just get in there.
It's a great time, for sure.
Yeah, and we also sometimes just hang out and play video games or just hang out and don't do anything in particular, which is also fun, especially now when you can't hang out with anybody in real life. But what you can do in real life these days is you can hang out with cows, because cows don't get, or to my knowledge, transmit COVID-19. So let's talk about the eponymous first cow in the world? Unclear. So obviously the central tension of this movie is that Chief Factor brings in a cow, a milk cow, to Fort Tillicum. Allegedly because he wants milk in his tea like a proper Englishman. And what ends up happening is that Cookie and King Lu come up with this plan to steal milk from the cow. So they sneak out into the pasture at night. Cookie sets up his little milking stool, has these heart-to-heart conversations with the cow while King Lu keeps watch in a tree. And then that's kind of what they use to make all these fancy baked goods. That is basically the entire like second act of the movie, is just them doing this, selling their baked goods to all of the fur trappers and whatnot, and making a bunch of money and kind of fantasizing about the life that they want to live once they take all their money to Saint Francisco.
So weird that they were saying Saint Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I mean, San is just... Yeah. Spanish for saint, right? But people weren't down with saying anything in Spanish back then, I assume. So the cow.
I just wanted to ask for clarity. What was the? I don't recall what their sort of primary like motivation for going about this plan was. Was it like we need to make money? Was it like this is a good way to make money? Mostly.
Yeah. Okay. It's mostly to make money, but then King Lu has this more like philosophical notion that he talks about a few times about that. Yeah, how it's like this is our window, because it's like we're the only people in, you know, however many hundreds of miles who have access to milk and also the skill to sort of, you know, make these fancy baked goods. And like once more milk cows show up, you know, bakers are going to come with them and it's going to be over for us. So we really need to like capitalize on this moment. And it's like a lot more time based kind of than one might think, just based on like a synopsis of the film.
Right.
Yeah. And then it kind of becomes, you know, we're going to run off together to Saint Francisco and open a hotel and, you know, live our lives of gentlemen of leisure.
Cow entrepreneurship.
That's cow. Right.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Yeah. And I feel like it was more just kind of like Cookie being like, oh, life's kind of sucks right now. Like, wouldn't it be great if we could just like have a cookie or like a biscuit or things like that? And then they just like take some
or a clafoutie.
Yeah. And they just like take some of the milk for themselves. And then it kind of escalates from there.
Yeah, because King Lou eats one of these buttermilk biscuits and he's like, oh my God, like we need to give these to people. We need to sell them. And that's kind of how it all starts. So the cow doesn't actually get that much screen time. Interestingly enough, I really assumed it would be before I knew anything about the film, before just like kind of seeing the trailer, was I thought it was just going to be like a cow herd and like the guy who's like using the milk to make things and just like their misadventures in the West.
Yeah, I'm so glad it wasn't that. I'm glad this wasn't like an animal movie, because we would have gotten some terrible CGI cow the whole film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a guy
just had like dead eyes, and then when they milk the udders, it would have looked really fucked up.
Would have like waggled its eyebrows at the camera. Yeah. That would be cool, yeah. Yeah, the whole tension of them stealing the milk actually created a very like real sense of suspense in the movie.
Yeah.
Rebecca was reacting to the scenes where where Cookie was milking the cow more or less the same way she reacted to scenes in Alien and Blood Quantum, where you were waiting for zombies or the xenomorph to come kill somebody.
I was so stressed out that they were going to get caught and they were going to get, like, you know, attacked, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Weirdly suspenseful.
Yeah.
And, like, I definitely think that Cookie's, like, very soothing words to the cows did not help at all with like
using that tension. No, it just made it worse. I was like, shut up, like, no, you can't be friends with this cow.
Yeah.
And then there was like Chief Proctor, is that his name?
Factor.
Mm-hmm. When he was like going on about how, you know, he believes in, was like in response to like the captain's attempted mutiny or something like that, and he was like, oh, sometimes, you know, you really just do need to, like, kill them because it makes an example of them. And it was just sort of, like, displaying these, like, oh, this is a very violent man who is all like that. And I was like, oh, no, oh, no.
Yeah, the foreshadowing was very, very on the nose, because they're, like, walking up. You can see them through a window during this conversation, you know, walking up, bringing this clafoutis up to the house. So the chief can serve it to his rival business partner. Yeah, and they're talking about how, like, oh, a mutineer, like, you need to kill those guys because the other men will see what happens to these disobedient dudes and they'll work harder or whatever. One thing I did want to say about the cow was I liked the sort of, like, the framing, I guess, the cinematography, the music around the cow. Was it treated it like this object of wonder, instead of just like some fucking animal, or like the way that a lot of the human characters are shot, is they're just like a grubby dude off to the side, or, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas the cow was this sort of like almost magical being.
Yeah. Whenever you see the cow during the day, he's always lit really well. It's always like directly in the middle of the frame.
Yeah, and like even at night, the cow is taking up like a third of the screen at any given moment, and Cookie is like almost like confessing sins to it or something. It's very fun. I like that a lot.
What were you gonna say, Joel?
Oh no, I was just appreciating how it was a fluffy cow.
Yeah, a very cute cow, by the way. Mm-hmm. Just like a very nice looking cow that I would love to pet.
Yeah, very well maintained for the screen. I'm sure that was somebody's job.
Yeah, the cow is credited. I forgot the cow's name.
It's like Evie?
Yeah, something like that. Evie. Yeah, and then speaking of foreshadowing, right? So there's obviously this scene where they're talking about punishments and stuff. There's a lot of things that are foreshadowed pretty explicitly in this film, even brain damage, which I thought was kind of funny, because there's this guy who you only really see for one scene. It's the bar fight before Cookie and King Lou kind of have their reunion, who everybody calls Brilliant William. And there's like just this asshole Scotsman like making fun of William, who like brings a baby to this bar. It's very confusing. And he's just like, this other guy's like pitching shit at William. And he like talks about how William, you know, cracked his brain bone and like thumps him on the forehead. And William's like this huge man, and he just looks over at Cookie and he's like, watch this for a second. And then he like turns around and punches the dude. And that's when you see that there's a baby in this basket.
And then I'm surprised the baby didn't come back as a plot point. Emily.
Yeah, it was later. Just right in there. And it's like, what is going on with that? I haven't really thought about it that much, but it's one thing that like, I'm sure it like means something, but what?
I feel like that was sort of like one of the indications that it was kind of like a slice of life where like, oh, these things are just happening and they're just happening because other people's lives are intersecting with like the characters that we are kind of seeing their lives play out. And none of them really have any weight in those in like the main characters' lives. They're just sort of like interacting with the lives of other people.
Like literally in the background having these like fights while he's just like drinking whiskey and cooing at a baby.
Yep.
Yeah. And then of course, Cookie gets brain damage later in the movie, which Rebecca and I were also talking about. This is like this thing that's like famously unrealistic in movies is that you like whack someone on the head and they just like pass out for an hour or so, when like in the real world, if you suffer head trauma and you're unconscious for more than like 10-15 seconds, you almost certainly have like very serious brain damage and need to go to a hospital. And that's just like, obviously it's a convenient movie trope, right? To like bonk someone on the head and like steal their uniform or whatever the fuck the plot calls for and then kind of go on with your life. But like, I mean, even in like fights, right? If you watch like MMA fights or whatever, when people are knocked unconscious from like pretty severe blows to the head, right? They're like awake within a few seconds almost every time.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, if you fall down a hill and hit your head on a rock, which made a horrible noise in the movie, boy, howdy, was that uncomfortable. Cookie is just fucked up for the rest of the movie. He's like confused. Mm-hmm. He can't really walk right. He just doesn't really know what's going on.
He only says like a few lines after that point as well.
Yeah. And they're all kind of like slurred and not very clear, like what's going on or what he's thinking. Which I also thought was interesting, and I think a testament to like how well the main actor was doing with the character of Cookie and like showing, like, I can't imagine it's easy to act and like depict a concussion as an actor, but I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was quite good. And I guess, you know, you love to see a realistic portrayal of head trauma.
Scratch that one off the bucket list too.
Yeah. finally I've seen head trauma portrayed dramatically but realistically. Yeah, so I guess with that, we're kind of at the end of the movie, at least as far as the plot is concerned. So I have a lot of feelings about the plot, but I'm curious what other people think before we get into a deeper discussion of it.
I really liked how it was all kind of like neatly wrapped up together with like the woman and her dog in the very beginning, just like out in a woods on the Oregon coast. Like, are they in Oregon? I have no idea. I assume so. Cause there's a bridge in Portland called Tillicum Crossing. So I imagine in Oregon,
it's actually called Tillicum Crossing, comma, Bridge of the People.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. I only know that because I was trying to look up Fort Tillicum, which I don't think was actually a real place. I couldn't find anything about it. But I kept getting results for Tillicum Crossing, Bridge of the People.
Huh. Anyway. Yeah, with just like the woman and her dog out in the woods discovering these two like skeletons. Just like lying in the ground, and she sort of like digs all the dirt away, and you can just see that they're just like lying right there next to each other, in the same position that you end up seeing Cookie and his friend at the very end, as they're trying to head on to like Astoria, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It was unclear, but I assume so, because like that's where you would get on a boat to go south, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I know I really enjoyed the part of the movie where I forgot his name. The guy who owns the cow.
Chief Factor.
Yeah, where sort of Chief Factor comes into the picture, and they go to his house because he hires them to make some cakes so that he can stick it to his friends. And I just really enjoy the way that everyone is intersecting in that scene together, and they are all I guess I should say the main characters are keeping secrets from Chief Factor at that point, and the tension and the sort of implicit humor that goes along with that. I also really like, of course, the scene where they are milking the cow for the last time, and then they get seen, what is
King
the
Lu?
Name? Yes, you're King Lu falls out of the tree.
Knocking it out of the park, Travis.
And I think those were my couple of favorite scenes.
I also like in the house scene when they bring the cake over, just like the racial tensions that are like again present but not discussed, and also the gender ones too.
It's a very interesting scene.
Yeah, where King Lu's talking about like, oh, you know, when I came here, there was beaver everywhere and blah, blah, blah. And then like the captain just kind of sneers at him. But King Lu doesn't really even notice and just keeps talking. And it's just like, I don't know. I think that was cool. I liked that element of the movie, how it's like, it's not ignoring it, but it's not gonna like deal with it in a way that you would need to like add a bunch of lines and scenes to kind of do it justice. That I think is one of my favorite scenes as well.
Yeah, there's that element that is present throughout, I think, the whole film of this. Everything feels pretty natural. Not quite into like mumblecore or anything, but like getting rid of that sort of goofy cinema-ifying of things that we're so used to. It feels like this movie really gets away from that and feels really original and refreshing, I think, in the way that it portrays things like those racial tensions. I mean, we often see stuff these days that's like pretty on the nose when it tries to like highlight issues of injustice and such, and
doesn't always do a good job of it.
Doesn't usually do a very good job of it. So, I mean, when we can see it in a way like in this film where it's realistic and you can like, it's clear to see, but it's not like preaching to you or anything, think that usually does a much better job. I know Joel really enjoyed this film. I wanted to know what he was gonna say.
I think the part of the film I enjoyed the most was just the relationship between Cookie and King Lu. I don't think we really talked about this much, but like near the beginning of the film, when they first stumble upon each other, I think King Lu actually says like, oh yeah, I just like killed a dude and the Russians are after me.
Yeah.
And there's like this
is a really good way to introduce a character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also that he might have killed someone, which is funny because when he says that, or when he said that initially, I was like, oh, okay, you're just like talking around the fact that you fucking murdered a guy. But then he's like, no, I shot him in the neck and then I ran away. So like, doesn't actually know if he's dead or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the very, like, I thought it was a funny scene, but then it's like followed up by like a very stressful scene where Cookie and the caravan are like on their way to the fort. But then you see Cookie, like, he's carrying like a carriage, like he's pulling a wheeled carriage. And inside of the carriage, you see just King Lu's under some blankets just chilling there.
Yeah.
And then eventually Cookie runs back to the carriage because he tries to catch some fish, and he sees that one of the other like caravan men are rummaging through the carriage, and King Lu is gone. And that was a good scene for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked those intro scenes too, where they're just kind of like schlepping through the forest, because the rest of the film really takes place in and around Fort Tillicum. And so I was kind of thinking like, oh, it's going to all be like in the woods, but it really isn't. It's just those beginning scenes. That actually, I think, is a pretty good place to talk about these depictions of masculinity, because it starts with Cookie just like collecting chanterelle mushrooms, which is like a fun pastime for people in like Western Oregon. And it's like this nice little banjo music, I think. I don't actually remember. Well, he's, you just have these like fun, bright yellow mushrooms on the ground, and he's just picking them, and it's all nice. And then he goes back to the camp, and there's like these men with rifles and fur hats, like passing around a flask, and then like harassing and abusing their cook. And so it's like, it's interesting, right? Because like, I think this whole concept of like gathering natural food from outside is something that now I would say is more or less pretty entwined in like masculinity as far as American culture is concerned. But then it's depicted as almost like womanish in this movie. And like Cookie is very much like a subservient. I mean, he's literally like serving these guys because he's cooking their food. But he's also portrayed as like just a lot more kind of a meek guy. But he's also totally in like important to the success of their expedition, right? Like if they all starve to death, they can't go sell their beaver pelts so they can like drink whiskey and like fuck prostitutes in the fort or whatever it was that dudes did back in first cow times. and then of course there's that scene of him just kind of doing some like basic homemaking in King Lou's cabin. The plot of course revolves around his ability to make nice food and people's deep desire to eat food that isn't shitty.
Yeah. And they like make fun of Chief Factor. Why do I say keep saying Proctor? I don't know.
That's a normal name.
Like a teacher or something whose name was like Proctor, and this is why you keep thinking this?
No, I mean, I'm just like, it reminds me of like John Proctor from like the Salem witch trials.
The Crucible.
The Crucible, you know? I don't know why that's stuck in my head, but why you keep saying it. But like they make fun of Chief Factor for wanting to have cream in his tea like a proper gentleman, and you know, like sort of like uses like feminizing language to speak about him.
Yeah, he's like kind of a dandy, kind of like this effete guy.
They called him like a gentle lady as well.
Yeah, like a proper lady. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's played for big laughs around the poker table, or cribbage, I think, is actually what they're playing. Yeah, but then of course, right, like people are willing to pay a ton of money for like these sweet little cakes. It obviously like dramatically increases everyone's quality of life. And of course, Chief Factor is like the main driving force of anything in this movie, right? He's got all the money, he's got all the hired guns, and like things are happening because he wants them to. So it's like it's a sort of interesting juxtaposition of like projection of power versus who actually has it and who's able to sort of, you know, exert their will on the world around them, I guess. And that's kind of like the more sinister version of like what it is to be like masculine and powerful and important. And then there's Cookie, who's I think the better side of that. That's like, it's fine if you're not sort of participating in these expressions of manhood in the same way, because like you're, you know, valuable. In this case, literally valuable, because you can sell your cakes for a bunch of money.
I think another character that like we didn't really mention, but really ties in for the like the idea of being a masculine person, is the boy who's like alluded to be the one who killed the both of them. Like the very first time this character shows up, he's like one of the workers of Chief Factor, like a guard of sorts. He's actually in line to to get one of the like oily cakes, but this older man.
Yeah, when I saw that. Sorry. Go ahead. Finish it.
I was gonna say, like, this older man like bumps out of line and gets the last oily cake, and this kid's just sitting there like really defeated.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, oh no, this kid's gonna, he's gonna come back and he's gonna like fuck shit up. He's gonna be so mad he didn't get his
shoot up the school.
Oh, yes, no. Didn't oh, get no. his oily cake. Yeah.
Yeah. I had the same thought of just like, oh no, the shot on this kid looking sad has gone on for way too long. He's gonna come right. back and it's gonna suck.
And then after that, it shows like the next day, the kid's there with another one of Chief Factor's like workers and like, oh, you better save an oily cake for the chief. And the worker like heckles the kid like, oh, get back to work. You're so lazy.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what like led the kid to continue following Cookie and King Lou and just like kind of proving himself as a good old soldier.
Yeah, he had to shoot up the school because he got bullied.
Exactly.
Yeah, shoots up the people that he thought was were responsible.
Yeah, for all of his suffering.
Yeah.
How awful.
And like a good incel, he shoots up the more womanly characters, right?
Yeah. And like the ones that are like clearly othered.
Yeah.
Gotta love masculinity.
It's cool. It's cool. It's good, folks. Yeah. I think actually I never talked about how I feel about the ending. I think we went on this little journey and I never actually talked about it. But I really liked how this movie ended. I thought like I wasn't crazy about the beginning with just like the lady and the dog and like finding the skeletons. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, but I would kind of just prefer that the movie like starts where it starts and not like in the future and then, you know, like 100 years earlier. But usually I don't like that, but I think it actually worked really well. And it's because the ending is so abrupt that it like totally recontextualizes. Well, not recontextualizes, but it like, you know, it depends on those beginning scenes to really drive home sort of the emotional like impact of what's going on. Because I was thinking, you know, as King Lou is like leading his concussed friend through the woods, you know, trying to get to Astoria so they can escape. I was like, because I you know, you figure they die, right? Because you see these two skeletons lying next to each other, but you don't know how they die. And I was like, are we just going to get like, you know, snow falling and the camera zooming out vertically as it's like implied that they freeze to death or whatever? Because like, that's fine, but it seems like kind of a shitty end to like
the beginning of Fortunate Son.
And it's actually been about Vietnam this whole time. Yeah. Yeah. But I actually really liked the ending because it's like Cookie's fucked up. He can't really go any farther. And he's clearly just like crawling off to find a comfortable hole to die in. And King Lou is sort of this like relentlessly trying to be optimistic, like, hey, it's all right. Like, you'll make it. This is actually a really great place to rest. No one can see us here. And, you know, you lie down. That's OK. I'll keep the first watch. And, you know, we'll go soon. And then he like kind of sits up for a little bit and looks down and I think like kind of touches Cookie's hand and lies down next to him. And then that's it. The credits roll. And so you don't really know how they died, right? Like it's implied that maybe this kid found and shot them. Cookie, I would assume, I don't know, had like a hematoma on his brain and died from that. But King Lou, like who knows, right?
I actually completely forgot about that opening scene when like the credits came around.
Oh, really?
It was roughly like, yeah, like 5 seconds after credits started going, Travis said like, wait, so were those skeletons at the start them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, oh, the sadness hit so hard because the skeletons at the beginning, you can actually see how King Lou's hand is like in the same spot as how the skeletons were found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah. And then that same banjo music plays from the beginning when Cookie was hunting mushrooms. And yeah, the credits roll by and that's the end. I really, really like the ending. As sad as it made me.
I feel like I'm still hung up on my feelings. I don't know.
Yeah. I kind of would rather have just had like interracial friendship in the forest, the movie, but who knows? Who knows how good that would have actually been? But I was just like so sad, and I was like wanted just their wholesome like friendship to continue forever, and it for it to end with them just like with their big sack of money, you know, sailing off into the sunset.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was wondering this. So what happens? Like, say you're that lady with her dog, and you find the skeletons, because there's a big bag of like silver and like artifacts and stuff. Do you just keep it?
Oh, is there a bag?
I thought the kid stole a bag.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, like, that's probably what happened. Because we didn't see it when we got the shot of the skeletons.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And then, you know, you saw him. Well, you saw, like...
He's holding it, yeah, at the end.
Yeah, like, yeah.
But then, yeah, it's
not there. But the kid is, you know, and you see him, like, following them.
True. Okay, well that clears up, I guess, that plot point. But I have like a real life question about this. It's like, what if you did find a big bag of silver? Like, is that just yours? Do you keep it? Do you like have, because you don't like have to give it to a museum, like you should, but
I think that depends on at what point you contact authorities to like find these bodies.
In
this scenario, are there bodies, or are there skeletons, or are there no skeletons?
I guess I don't know if that changes things.
I feel like for me it would change things. I feel like I'd be more likely to take it for myself if there were not skeletons. And I feel like if there were skeletons, I would feel a sort of responsibility to report it, or more of a responsibility.
Definitely. Yeah. And then like have to, you know, make sure that like it's not like a Kennewick Man situation.
Right. Well, I mean, the skeletons, definitely, I would report. But I just mean, like, what about all the silver?
I mean, I imagine they'd be like, oh, well, we could tell these skeletons were, like, holding something for a long time. That was, like, dislodged.
Do you think
I don't know.
Have a big bag of silver by any chance?
But, like, fibers on their, like, skeleton hands?
That's true. I would probably be more worried about the skeletons reanimating me and murdering me because I stole their silver.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think probably more than anything is why I would report it if I did, in fact, end up reporting it.
But maybe I would take some silver.
Just like a coin.
Just
or
like
two.
A couple as like a keepsake.
And I would explain very calm. I would simply explain to the skeletons that it's really hard out here and I could use the money.
Yeah. Times haven't gotten much better.
And if the skeletons were in an embrace, I would definitely take a picture of them, add to the collection of.
Yeah.
Skeleton couples, this could be us, but your plan.
Yeah, yeah. Or just post it on Instagram. Gay.
Could be a part of like some, I don't know, like cottage core aesthetic.
Oh,
Tumblr,
yeah.
You know, like
the
I die with my like queer
aesthetic.
Lover.
Yeah.
You know,
like
in the
that.
Woods. So I feel like there needs to be more flowers.
Yeah.
For it to be proper. Cottagecore.
It's kind of a cottagecore movie.
It is. It really is. But like, I don't know. There's like, it's boys, so.
Yeah.
Is it
boys
really cottagecore?
Boys having cottagecore in the woods.
Fellas, is it gay to do cottagecore? So I think, unless anybody has anything else to say, it sounds like we're just talking about like internet bullshit now instead of the movie.
But I feel like it's related to First Cow.
That's true. Yeah, I guess so. Final thoughts on First Cow are I liked it. If you can reasonably check it out, I recommend it. It's a good movie. I think it's also one that importantly you don't need a theater to really like get a good immersive experience. I think it's a pretty gripping film just based on like the aesthetics and, you know, general sound design and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's no so, Tenet.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
That one, I do want to see that, but yeah, so I recommend First Cow. I enjoyed it quite a lot.
I definitely recommend it too, even though it like made me have lots of feelings. Yeah. If you want feelings, watch this movie.
Yeah.
It's a good time to learn about, you know, cows and the boys.
What is a cow, really?
Don't watch the movie if you want to know about cows, because there's not a lot about cows.
You're not going to learn a lot.
You just, like, look at the cow.
You'll see one really nice cow. You'll see and a that, cow. It actually might ruin your expectations for other cows.
I'll echo what you said at the beginning, Cam, that, like, I like the movie. I probably won't watch it again. I didn't necessarily think it was memorable enough to, like, have a place in my brain for all of eternity. Yeah. But it was a good movie. I liked it. I liked the cow and I liked the guys being dudes.
Yeah. It's a good film, but not very eventful.
Definitely. Yeah. And I feel like
just
I like
a little bit of a letdown for me just because I had read so much critical praise for it. The people who reviewed this movie that I read made it sound like it was like one of the best movies they'd ever seen. And I don't believe it is anything like that. So I don't know. I wish I hadn't read things like that because I think my expectations were set a little higher than they should have been. But it was enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely good. Damn it. I had one thing to say and I forgot.
Right.
Yeah. It's my one job as a podcaster is to think of things and then say them. Well, I might think about it later. In the meantime, though, what are we going to watch next?
So the next film that we're watching is, it was a unilateral decision that I made because Cam and I had the opportunity to go watch it in a drive-through theater setting, and I thought, that was cool, that's fun.
Drive-in
theater. Oh, yeah, a drive-in theater, excuse me.
Interesting.
How would that work? I don't know.
I'm imagining, like, the rides, like, at Disney World that just kind of take you through a tunnel with various, like, things happening. That's what I think a drive-through movie is.
Drive-through movie,
like an in-person slideshow, but it's a film.
Yeah, right. Or, like, animatronics or, like, projections on, like, a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to watch Mad Max Fury Road. So,
yeah,
I'm excited. Going to watch Apocalypse. Yeah. I guess post-apocalypse.
Yeah. One of my favorite movies of all time. I think it bears mentioning.
Yeah. I have seen this movie many, many times, but it has been several years since I have last watched it. So it'll definitely be fun, I think.
And a theater presentation of Mad Max Fury Road was, I want to say, the first event that we were unable to go to because of the COVID-19 lockdowns. So it's kind of coming full circle since March.
Yeah.
Because we were going to do it. And it was like the very week that people were like voluntarily shutting things down. And then like, I think they had postponed it because they're like, okay, we're going to split the screening so we can just have like a few people in the theater at once and keep distances. And then the state was just like, no, you can't do movie theaters anymore.
Yeah, you have to like shut down, like shelter in place stuff.
Yeah. So this time we can just do it in the car and hopefully that all works out.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. And with that, I still haven't remembered that last thing I was going to say, so I don't think any of us are ever going to
We were talking about final thoughts on the film and whether or not we enjoyed it was just sort of thoughts on that concept.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
It's gone. You've lost those
it's
thoughts. Gone.
It's completely
lost
was
the concussion.
It leaked right out of my ears. It's in a puddle on the floor now.
Yeah.
So thank you everybody for listening. Again, follow us on Twitter at MotionPicPals. Sign up for emails on Substack, motionpicturepals.substack.com, bit.ly/motionpicturepals to join the Discord. You know, I told you this earlier. I frankly can't believe you don't remember this stuff, and it's ridiculous that I have to keep telling you. But again, thank you for listening. Join us next time for Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, and join in the discussion if you've seen it or you want to talk about your favorite moments.
Like, my dad didn't like Mad Max Fury Road, and he's incorrect. So we can talk about that. Just enjoy the movie. It's not Citizen Kane.
I'll say it's a considerably better movie than First Man.
Is that First a, what is that?
First Man is a, what is that director's name? I forget. It is a sort of biographical.
Oh yeah, it's the biopic. It's about Neil Armstrong. Yeah.
Hmm.
I almost said Louis Armstrong.
Damien Chazelle, the director of Whiplash/La La Land, and now First Man, and I couldn't make it through that movie. That movie is like mumblecore to the max.
Which is like a very inappropriate setting for mumblecore. Is like
right.
The first man who fucking walked on the moon is like the definition of extraordinary.
I could not stand that movie.
I have not seen it or anything. I'm looking at the Wikipedia article now. It said Clint Eastwood was going to be the director, which I also don't think would translate very well to.
I would rather watch the story directed by Clint Eastwood, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like, I can't say whether it would be better or not, but I remember watching Jersey Boys, like the film adaptation that Clint Eastwood directed. And it's really weird because it's just like so dark and smoky and moody, but then it's like fun pop from like the 50s and like Frankie Valli and his like ridiculous falsetto.
Oh. Huh.
And I was like, why does this look like The Godfather? Because then I saw it on stage not long after that. And it's just like a very like fun, over the top, like Broadway show. It's like, it was weird. It was a weird film adaptation. I didn't dislike it, but it was a weird experience.